Welcome back to the Neuro Trinity, where we use short, digestible episodes to understand the interactions between hormones, brain, and sex peeve. I am your host, Brandon Alonso. So this special episode will be dedicated to a discussion on semilparity, which is a mating strategy characterized by a single reproductive episode before death. Today, I will talk more about semilparity and its prevalence, contextualize the phenomenon in particular organisms, and discuss what we can learn from these models as it relates to human sex behavior. I will also discuss more broadly why semilparity has become fascinating to me. So let's get started. So in most species, including humans, there is a balance between sex and survival which allows these organisms to experience multiple reproductive events in their lifetime. These organisms are known as interpares organisms, who can avoid excessive sexual activity based on internal physiological state and past sexual experience. However, there are other organisms who experience a single, yet fatal reproductive event. These organisms are known as semilparous organisms. To my surprise, semilparity can be seen in Pacific salmon. In the summer or fall, Pacific salmon migrate upstream to where they were born in order to reproduce. Some species of salmon travel thousands of miles, so you can imagine that this physically draining journey is one explanation for their semilparity. After reading through marine science and online research for oceanography and marine biology, I learned that during salmon's journey upstream, they transition from ocean water to fresh water, which causes their body to practically break down. They stop feeding, live off stored fat in their body, and become bloated. Once the male and female finally reach their destination and reproduce, they become weaker with each day and are ultimately washed away downstream. A study conducted in 2005 by Berry and colleagues have compared the cortisol levels of semilparous salmon to interparous salmon to see if cortisol response can help to explain the death that follows reproduction. What they found were higher levels of cortisol in semilparous salmon, and that these cortisol levels can contribute to tissue degeneration and suppression of the immune system. These findings suggest that brain regions such as the hypothalamic pituitary intraneal axis, which responds to stress through cortisol response, may contribute to this programmed death in salmon. While the lengthy travel and harsh transition from the ocean water to fresh water are costly to the salmon's health, salmon have developed strategies to ensure that this reproductive event is successful. Using previously published life history trait data on salmon, a group of researchers have found that semilparous salmon actually produce larger eggs. It's really amazing to see what these organisms can accomplish. But even more amazing is the effort of the octopus. Given their cannibalistic nature, octopuses only come together when they are ready to mate. After mating, the male experiences symptoms such as a lack of feeding, uncoordinated movement, and the development of lesions on the body, which are followed by death. This stage in the octopus's life cycle is known as senescence, which is discussed in further detail by Dr. Ruth Ann Beern in her 2002 review, Octopus Senescence, The Beginning of the End. Senescence is said to occur at different points in males and females. Typically, senescence occurs shortly after mating in males and after brooding the eggs in females. The mother displays an extreme pattern of maternal care, where she will protect her eggs without even moving from her position to feed herself. This has been shown to last as long as 4.5 years, which is just nuts. To provide the energy to do this, the mother will metabolize her own body fat and will lose anywhere from 50 to 70% of her body weight. If females survive this process, they will exhibit the same symptoms that males do. Like the mediation of cortisol in the death of salmon, a large shift in several signaling pathways in the optic glands have been shown to be implicated in the octopus's post-reproductive death. As females transition from growing and sustaining themselves to caring for their eggs, neuropeptides influencing feeding behaviors have been shown to decrease, while steroid signaling has been shown to increase. Hopefully, this discussion has helped to show the prevalence of similarity and the ways in which the brain, hormones, and behavior interact with each other during this phenomenon. While I've only provided two examples, other similar organisms include some species of plants, leeches, some species of shrimp and moths, possums, marsupials, and praying mantises. I actually think that there's plenty to learn from similarparous organisms. Maybe one of the more direct observations that can be made is that potentially, similar brain regions could be involved in preventing excessive sex in iterparous organisms like humans. While there are processes that motivate sex behavior, the research that I have mentioned demonstrates that there are also processes that discourage excessive sex behavior. So this is one way that this research can be translatable to iterparous organisms. But if I'm thinking more broadly about this topic, and not taking the translation between each species too literally, this also makes me think about death in a different way, somewhat in a more optimistic way. And I know it sounds strange to say, but similarity captures this idea in a bit of a heroic fashion. Whether it be the salmon who embarks on this physically taxing journey in order to mate and reproduce, or a mother octopus who will take every measure possible to ensure that her youth survive, it is all for the sake of continuing life. And now that I'm venturing off into this philosophical thought, I think that what I've said shows in a very dramatic way that there is life in death. Even after the salmon has reproduced, they are still promoting life elsewhere, whether it be as nutrition for a bear wading at the end of a river, or for smaller fish nearby. The salmon really isn't at rest. It's almost as if in death, the salmon was not only able to ensure the birth of its offspring, but are anywhere and everywhere on Earth shaping the trajectories of other organisms in one way or another. It's a very powerful idea that I think applies to all forms of life. And you're probably thinking, Brandon, it's not that deep. But sometimes I cannot see such a direct translation in research, and can't help but venture off into these larger, more broad ideas. So this is the second observation that I made while learning more about similarity. Well, that's all for today's episode. As always, thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next one. The NeuroTrinity is written and produced by me, so if you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to tell anyone who you feel might enjoy the show. Okay, everyone, that's all I got. Talk to you soon!